Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by CWB and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 29. Takatakapa. The Penny Drops. Summary. Sherlock sneaks back to the creche before the sun comes up. Before he can share his epiphany with John, however, he needs his very angry Ippo to calm down. Sherlock approaches the creche as quietly as he can, hoping that everyone, especially John, is still asleep. The sun is cut through the horizon now, and long shadows cast by Cassiopeia's peaks are traversing the ice, almost as fast as Sherlock. Beyond the creche, the senior Pengs are stirring. He knows they might question why he's up so early, or where he's been, but he doubts any of them will chastise him, none of them but Moringa. He has to make it back before she sees him. He is so close now, and if he can get just a little closer before being noticed, he can say that he just woke up and was stretching his wings, or taking a stroll, or he was going to help hunt for an early breakfast. Almost there. Ahead of him, Cetus is waking, lifting his head from his shoulder and stretching his long neck up and back. Sherlock is almost close enough. Cetus looks in the opposite direction, toward the furthest shore, and ruffles his feathers. He takes a deep breath, takes a step away from the adult huddle, and begins to preen. He hasn't seen Sherlock. Almost there. Sherlock drops to the ice and toboggans the rest of the way. Chances are he won't be able to slow or stop before he crashes under the creche, but the fallout from that is preferable to being caught out by the adults, who are all beginning to stir now that Cetus has. They can't see him now, not with the junior Pengs blocking their line of sight to Sherlock's approach. Almost there. Sherlock drops and drags his feet on the ice. He would normally put his wings down to increase the drag, but he cannot do so now, because he's holding the tooth tied up against his body with one wing. He aims himself toward John, just in case he can't stop in time. Just in case, it would be much better to take out John, who would be startled, but forgive him, than Irina, or Janine, or, gods forbid, Anthea. From out of nowhere, one head pops up from the edge of the creche. Huddy. But of course, Huddy. She opens one eye, cocks her head to the side, and zeroes in on Sherlock, only three blinks away now. He plants his bill on the ice, flips up to standing, and winks at her. She gives him a slow shake of her head, sighs, and tucks her head under her wing again. Tenakwe, Huddy, Sherlock thinks. Thank you. He's pressed up against John now, insinuating himself between his sleeping Ippo and Mauling, who doesn't wake as she's jostled and repositioned into Lestra. Mauling fusses in her sleep a bit, and Lestra lifts one wing just enough to nudge her under it with the other, and then he rests his head on her shoulder, and they both slip back to the depths of their slumber. Sherlock watches them diligently, making sure they're settled and not about to catch him out, so he does not notice the pair of eyes glaring at him from half-slit lids. These particular eyelids belong to his very own Johnling, and as soon as Sherlock feels the weight of them on his face, he snaps his eyes shut and pretends to sleep. It's ridiculous, he knows it is, but it's the best combination of avoidance and delay he can come up with in the moment. Of course he doesn't get away with it. Shut up! Sherlock opens one eye as wide as the filament of one of his undercoat feathers, sees John's astronomically annoyed face close to his, and slams it shut again. I know you can hear me, John growls under his breath. And I know that as soon as you realize that I know you've been gone all night, you will start talking. And as soon as you start talking, you will start spinning some ridiculous tale about unidentified flying supernovae or some such rot. And as soon as you start up with that, I will tell you to shut up. So I'm just going to say it now. Shut up. They could exist, you know, Sherlock says, not bothering to open his eyes. They could not. Could shut up. Sherlock's next tactic is slightly more sophisticated than pretending to sleep. He wraps his free wing around John and hugs him as hard as he can, but still keeps his eyes shut. John lets out a small puff of air and squirms, putting space between them again. "Did I not just say that I know you were gone all night? So you missed me? Because I missed you too. I actually thought about you the entire time I was gone, if you want to know the truth. I went in search of something very important, John Ling, but what I found was not at all what I was expecting. I saw the light, you might say, and I mean that in more ways than one. I can explain. You're not going to shut up, are you? This is important, John." The two of them are hissing at each other, trying not to have a repeat of what happened a few mornings ago when Lester and Molling woke up and overheard them talking about their stolen ice cave treasure. "Open your eyes, Pingit. Look at me." Sherlock opens his eyes and cranes his head back a bit, just in case John is still shooting close-range daggers at him. One look at John's adorable face, though, and Sherlock scooches right back and rubs his neck against John's, and his cheek, and his bill.
All right, calm down."
Sherlock doesn't want to calm down. Epiphanies should not result in calming down, he thinks. Epiphanies should result in kissing and cuddling and pronouncements of passion. To this end, he wriggles up against John again and presses their foreheads together. He rubs his wingtip down John's cheek and neck and gently slides his bill along John's.
"You mean it, don't you? You found something important?"
"Yes. More important than the tooth?"
"The tooth is not important."
"Not important?
The seed tooth we've been obsessing over the last several days is not important? The one that Moringa stole from us and we stole back and then have been protecting with our very lives is not important?"
"Good, you understand." Sherlock nibbles his way down John's neck and snuggles the top of his head into John's shoulder.
"No, I really don't. Come on, come with me."
John nudges Sherlock back from the edge of the crash, poking his wings into Sherlock's ribs to get him to move.
"Ow! Move now."
He flutters his wings against Sherlock's belly.
"Stop panhandling me. Let's go."
This is not the epiphanic love fest moment Sherlock was hoping for. John most definitely owes him an epiphanic love fest moment. They walk down to the landing shore, which is deserted this early in the morning, and have a bit of a staring contest. John is tapping his foot on the ice, waiting for Sherlock to explain himself. So Sherlock takes a deep breath and begins.
"Okay, it started like this. How did Moringa hurt her foot? She fell. She must have fallen from a great height. Why was she at a great height? Was she looking for something? Someone? What? Who? Where?"
He pauses. "See?" John narrows his eyes at him and increases the rate of his foot tapping.
You don't see. Okay, I needed to find out what she might be hiding, but I knew I couldn't just go wandering off without a good excuse, so I waited until everyone fell asleep, and then I went."
John sighs. Sherlock continues, spewing out his story as quickly as he can, so that John has no time to interject, derail, or otherwise dampen the spirit of his big reveal. He describes his trek up and down and around the berg, climbing every surface, poking into every crevice, until he came back to their ice cave and thought to check it one more time. He tells him about the moonlit interior of the cave, the illuminating brightness, the sparkling surfaces, the clarity of the light, and the absolute absence of anything significant.
"And that's when it hit me, John. It doesn't matter what she's doing. It doesn't matter what the tooth can do for us. Even if it's real, even if it could grant us tremendous power, what would we do with it? We have each other and our friends and our families. We can accomplish what we want together, just the two of us, against the rest of the world, tooth or no tooth."
He sees the exact moment John begins to truly understand, which is the same moment he lets go of his frustration and anger. Sherlock forges ahead.
"Think about it, John. Work it out backwards. The tooth gives the bearer power to find the Heartstone, because the Heartstone might save Korora, who might save Amarere, who might return to us to bring us peace and kindness and grace and all that good community stuff. Or not. We don't really know, do we? Why are we waiting for some possibly does not exist mythological god to fetch a possibly does not exist mythological body part so he can give it to his sister, who might not even be able to do anything with it, to possibly hatch a chick that's been stuck in an egg in the stars for eons and eons, so that she can descend from the heavens. I get it, I get it. Breathe, Sherping, breathe. Sherlock takes a deep breath and settles his disheveled feathers. He's worked himself into a bit of a lather. I think what you're saying is perhaps we've put too much faith in the power of something that might not even exist, and that it's time for us to take responsibility for ourselves and to make our own decisions and to live the right way regardless of an egg in the sky. We need to save ourselves. Exactly, John. John nods his head and flutters his wings out a bit. So, he continues, what did you do with the tooth? He says this with a certain tone that conveys a very different question, something along the lines of, please tell me you did not fling the potentially god-power-infused tooth into the sea. Oh, I've still got the tooth. You are right. We need to tell Mycroft and Erebus and my father, and we need to deal with this as a community, because that's the whole point, right? Community. The last of John's impatience and reluctance melt away. You are brilliant. You are amazing. Come here. Finally, Sherlock thinks, they can move on to the epiphanic love fest. Sherlock moves into John's wings, and John goes up on his toes to nuzzle Sherlock's neck and chin and face and beak. The affectionate onslaught is perfection. Sherlock lets out a string of soft chirps against John's ear. This does not mean, John says, pulling back enough to give Sherlock a stern look, that I am not still mad that you snuck off in the middle of the night to climb great heights on slippery surfaces and risk your very life while I was asleep. Make no mistake. Okay, Sherlock whispers, rubbing increasingly larger surfaces of his body across John, chest and belly and wings. That's okay. You won't stay mad long, will you, Johnling? I do not appear to have the ability to stay mad at you for long, Pengit. It's one of your many charms and one of my weaknesses. You don't have any weaknesses, John, not a single one. Sherlock presses the top of his head under John's chin, and the two of them wobble, threatening to topple over backwards. You are my paying heart, only you. You are my greatest weakness. I lose all sense when it comes to what I would do for you. John slides his wings up and down Sherlock's and turns his head so they are cheek to cheek. I would rather be your greatest strength. You're that too, and now I need you to have the strength to stop molesting me, which is fantastic, but also breaking those three rules we established for ourselves. Remember? We agreed not to draw any not-so-good attention to ourselves by doing anything potentially adultish in public, or anything we can be disciplined for, or anything that would attract Moringa's attention in any way whatsoever. What kind of hear-hear came up with those rules? They're stupid. Sherlock pouts into John's shoulder, which at the moment seems like a wonderful place to nuzzle his bill. You're the idiot who came up with those rules, and me. We agreed. John extends one wing down and rubs over Sherlock's hip and thigh. Then you should set a good example and stop breaking those stupid rules, Johnling, right now. You're being a bad influence. Very, very bad. Sherlock is panting now, bill open, head back, neck elongated. From some distance away, they hear a loud, shrill whistle. They jump apart and turn toward the sound, puffing and shuffling themselves back into order. Boys, come get breakfast, Huddy screeches at them. Oh my God, she is such a pain blocker, isn't she? Totally. John rubs one more kiss into Sherlock's neck and wraps a wing around his side. Together they head back to the council grounds and to the day ahead of them to wait for Seeger's arrival. Notes. Maori translations. Hear, hear. Fool, idiot, buffoon. Taka te kapa, the penny drops. Te nā koe. Hello, thank you, when talking to one person.